Chapter 22. It was going on 10 o'clock at night when I pulled up at Mrs. King's house. Too late for polite company to knock on her door, but I figured this was important enough to bend the rules. Then I stopped myself, just as I was about to get out of the truck. I was working with the gut feeling that one of her sons might be a killer after all. I was still trying to find her other son, but in doing that, it felt more and more like I might eventually end up finding them both. Could I really ask her to help me do that? I thought about it for a few seconds. That's really all it took. Then I got out and went to knock on the door.
"Alex," she said as she opened it. "I thought you were going back home."
Yeah, I thought so too. But then I thought better of it.
"I don't understand. You said there was nothing left for you to do."
"There really isn't," I said. "But there is something for you to do."
"What's that?"
"Tell me where the bread box is." She looked at me for a long moment.
"It's in the kitchen," she finally said. "Where else would a bread box be?"
"I don't think that's the bread box I'm looking for."
"Come sit down," she said. "I'll make some coffee, and you can tell me what in heaven's name you're talking about."
I was about to protest, but a cup of coffee sounded perfect at that point. I sat in the kitchen and watched her make it. I tried not to show my disappointment because I had just seen my angle disappear. Her intimate knowledge of her two sons, that was my advantage after all, my only advantage. The FBI had a national organization with agents spread out across the country. They had the technology. They had satellites in space, for God's sake. All I had was Mrs. King. "You're the only one who can figure this out," I said to her. "If Daryl wanted to meet Tremont at the bread box, where would that be?" She put the two mugs of coffee on the table and sat down.
"I never heard them use that term before," she said. "Neither one of them."
"Are you sure? Think back." She sat there and worked it over.
"No, Alex, I'm sorry. I've never heard either one of my boys call anything a bread box, except the one we've got right here in the kitchen."
"Well, I suppose they could always meet here," I said, looking over at the wooden box on the counter. "But that just doesn't make sense. Why would you say it that way? You might as well say, meet me at the toaster."
"Maybe they're going to meet at a bakery," she said. "Somewhere they make bread."
"Do you know of a place like that? Maybe even called the bread box?"
"No, I don't. But that bakery where they made the Wonder Bread, that was just a few blocks over."
"Wait a minute," I said. "Was that still open when Daryl was still..." I did the math in my head. "I think it was," I said. "The big Wagner Bakery with the Wonder Bread sign out front on Grand River."
"Which isn't there anymore."
"He has to know it's not there anymore, right? It's been closed for years. In fact..."
"The casino," she said. "They used that building for the casino."
I tried to imagine Daryl King meeting his brother at the Motor City Casino. Maybe the most camera-dense environment in the entire city. He'd be a fool to show his face there. Yet what if he sent that message down the line without thinking about what that building had become? He could be sitting outside that casino, watching for his brother to appear, cursing himself for not doing a better job in his planning, but sitting there just the same because the message had been sent. And now he had to play out his hand. "I should go over there and check it out," I said, lacking any better idea.
"I'll keep thinking," she said. "If I remember another kind of bread box, I'll give you a call."
"All right, please do. I'm going to get going." I was half out of my chair when she stopped me.
"It was really him? Daryl's really looking for his brother?"
"Well, somebody's looking for TK," I said. "As of 2 nights ago."
"That has to be Daryl," she said. "After all this time, he's looking for his brother."
That much was true, I thought. As for what he'd do with him when he found him, I wondered if I'd end up being there when it happened. It was a short drive to the Motor City Casino. Of course, that was the general idea behind the message. Pick a spot they both knew, a spot both could have walked to back in the day. Pick a spot that would mean something to the two of them, but nobody else. But if you were looking for the old bakery where they made the Wonder Bread, dominating the corner of Grand River and Temple Street, your only clue would be the Wagner Baking Company sign high on the original brick walls. The rest of the corner was taken over by the gleaming metal facade of the casino, with the new hotel looming right behind it. It lit up the night sky, of course, as all non-Indian casinos do. There was a parking structure next door that took up a good city block. It was already feeling like a lost cause, but I drove up through the structure all the way to the top level. I parked near the edge overlooking the casino, and I went and stood there and looked down at the people all dressed up for the evening, going into the casino to lose their money. I looked at my watch. It was pushing 11 o'clock. 1 hour, I said to the night. What are the odds it'll be anywhere around here? I went down to the street and walked around the casino. I tried to look like I was on my way somewhere at all times. I figured the security guys probably wouldn't look kindly on a man just standing outside, scoping out the building for an hour. Midnight came, and I had my answer. If Daryl was going somewhere every night at midnight, hoping to meet his brother, I was pretty sure it wasn't here. My biggest worry was that the meeting had already happened. I just had to hope that a few days would pass before Tremont got the message and made his way up here, assuming he felt like coming at all. I gave Mrs. King a call, apologizing for the late hour, but of course I knew she'd be up. I told her I'd come up empty, but that we would regroup tomorrow and try to think up a new plan. "Put it in your head," I said to her, "right as you're going to sleep. Ask yourself where the bread box is. Maybe in the morning it'll come to you." I wished her a good night, then I went back to my motel. When I went back to see her the next morning, she didn't have an answer for me.
"I did like you suggested," she said. "I told myself that I'd remember some reference to the bread box by the time I woke up. But it didn't happen."
We had coffee in her kitchen. I brought along my map of Detroit, and I spent a good part of the morning figuring out just how far a young Tremont would venture from his mother's house and where Daryl would go to find him. I shook my head and drew a big circle with Ash Street at the center. It was a good-sized piece of the city, from downtown all the way up to Wayne State. It was basically the western half of my old precinct. "I know these streets," I said. "I drove on them every day, that same summer he went away. So where the hell is the bread box?" She got up and grabbed the phone book. Then she sat back down and looked up bakery in the yellow pages.
"There's a bakery over on Cass," she said. "Kind of far, but no, this is one of those organic places. I don't think that was around then."
"I imagine not."
"Here's a bagel place by the college. Did they even have bagels back then?"
"In New York, yes. Michigan, I'm pretty sure, no." She went through the rest of the listings.
"There's just no other bakery in the area anymore," she said. "Of course, I'm not surprised. Most of the businesses are gone now."
I looked at her. "Say that again."
"Most of the businesses are gone now."
"So we need to go back in time," I said. "Look up bakeries in old phone books."
"Where are we going to find those?"
"Where do you think?" I said, getting up from the table. "You feel like taking a ride with me?" I held open the passenger door for her. My truck was a little high off the ground, but she hauled herself up with no problem.
"I can't remember the last time I rode in a truck," she said. "Not since my man ran off."
"Sounds like the worst move any man ever made." She smiled at that.
"You got that right, mister."
She put her seatbelt on and sat with her purse in her lap as I drove us over to the Detroit Library. We parked and went inside, found the reference desk, and asked for the old editions of the Yellow Pages. I remembered being here once before, at this very desk, asking to see the old city directories. I was hoping that once again the trusty reference librarian would come through for me. 10 minutes later, Mrs. King and I were sitting at one of the big tables, looking back in time.
"There was so much more of everything," she said as she took a quick run through the book at random. "Even back then, when it felt like we were already hurting."
There wasn't much to say to that, so I asked her to go to a bakery and start reading off the entries. I had a pad of paper to write down any that sounded promising. There was the Wagner Baking Company, of course. We'd already been down that road. We found another old bakery that had been on Michigan Avenue, and another that had been up on Warren Avenue. There was nothing else within reasonable walking distance from Ash Street. We thanked the reference librarian and got back in my truck. Then we went and searched for the address of the old bakery on Michigan Avenue. It was west of the stadium site, on a block where someone had been taking old abandoned storefronts and painting them bright colors.
"Someone's going to town here," she said.
She nodded her head toward the building in the center of the block.
"That one's got the windows you'd expect to see for a bakery, huh? Put those nice cakes right out front for people to see."
"Did you ever come here to buy bread or anything else?"
"Not that I can remember."
As we sat there, pulled up against the curb, I couldn't help but look out across the opposite side of the street, where the old train station rose a few blocks away from us, high above everything else. "All right, let's check out the other one," I said, pulling back into traffic. We turned on Rosa Parks and went up the Grand River. It was the one diagonal street in a neighborhood full of east-west and north-south. When we got to the intersection with Warren Avenue, it was yet another illustration of just how badly this city had fallen apart.
"I remember this," she said, pointing to the southwest corner, where there was now nothing but a buckled slab of concrete in the ground. "There was an auction house here, and a place to buy tents and awnings and things."
I think the bakery was half a block this way. I took the turn around a great brick building that had probably once been a manufacturing site. The sign on the top of the building now advertised Architectural Salvage. At ground level, someone had spent many hours spray-painting an elaborate set of graffiti and garish cartoons. I couldn't find the actual address for the bakery. Whatever building it had once lived in was now long gone.
"No bread box here,"
Mrs. King said as she looked at the empty lot.
"There's nothing here at all."
"We've got a couple of possibilities now," I said, "although that last one down by the station feels a little more promising. Coming up here, that's the opposite direction entirely."
"What are we going to do next?"
"You're going to go back home. You never know when Daryl might just show up there."
"What are you going to do?"
"I'm going to do my favorite thing in the world," I said. "Sit around and wait." I took her back to her house. Then I went back to the Michigan Avenue site by myself to scout it out. There was a pawn shop on one corner, then the old storefronts, then a bar on the other corner. There were two more bars across the street. It was quiet now in the afternoon, but I had to figure this block would really pick up after dark. I circled around the block. There was parking behind the buildings. I could keep making a loop around the block, watching for Daryl King, or for the car he was driving, assuming he was still in his aunt's car, a 10-year-old powder-blue Pontiac Bonneville with a big dent in the front right quarter panel. Or else, I could get out and walk around on foot. Either way, I'd have to keep my eyes open. If it was later in the day, I would have just stayed there and gotten ready for my midnight watch. But I still had hours to kill, so I ended up going back up to the other location. I still wasn't feeling like this was nearly as promising, but I parked my truck anyway and walked around on the empty streets. There was an auto parts store next to the old empty bakery site. Next to that was one of those wholesale distributors where you can buy office furniture, light fixtures, refrigerators, probably even a kidney if you hit them on the right day. This can't be the place, I thought. I turned to go back, already thinking about when I would grab something to eat. Then I saw the railroad bridge. It was a block to the north, down a little one-way side street. As I walked closer, I saw that it was actually two separate bridges for two separate parallel sets of tracks, about 30 feet apart. There was a sidewalk that ran under the bridges, and as I walked along it, I found what seemed like a decade's worth of trash and dirt, and a few half-hearted attempts at graffiti. There was a thin trail that sloped up from the sidewalk into the gap between the two bridges, where it disappeared into a thick mass of sumac trees. It was the last thing I wanted to do at that point, but the train tracks were here, right here, behind the site of an old bakery, and I couldn't make myself ignore that fact. So I bent down to clear the lowest branches and pushed myself through the underbrush, following the trail as it led up a short slope to the higher ground between the tracks. This little sumac forest was protected on either side by the tracks, and it ran from this street all the way to the next street a block away, where the train tracks crossed over another set of bridges. It wasn't a place you'd expect to find any people, not in this forgotten strip of real estate. Yet the ground was littered with candy wrappers and condoms and hypodermic needles and God knows what else. I was just about to turn around and get the hell out of there. That's when I saw the remains of a little shed at the end of the trail. Oh, no way, I said to myself. This can't be it. Yet as I moved closer, I saw that it had been here for a long, long time, and, while empty at the moment, had been used by 1,000 drug addicts and vagrants and probably a few animals. A low rumbling had been building all the while I was up there. Now, as it broke through to my consciousness, I knew exactly what it was. I stood there next to the shed and watched the freight approaching on the northernmost tracks. It didn't seem to be going that fast, but as it came upon me, I felt the push of the air around me and the earthquake under my feet from the 10,000 tons of iron. It was close enough that I could reach out and touch it if I wanted to. I could imagine grabbing a handle as it passed by, letting it lift me off my feet with a great jerk. The moment of sheer terror as I trusted all of my weight to the strength of one hand, with failure meaning that I'd surely fall under the wheels and feel my legs sliced cleanly from my body. You might come here, I thought, if you were a 14-year-old boy with nowhere else to go, no friends to hang out with, if you loved trains and dreamed about hitching a ride on them someday. You might come here to this little shed in the right-of-way between the railroad tracks behind the bakery. You might even call it the bread box. I wasn't sure how much I wanted to come back here at midnight, but I knew that was exactly what I had to do.